Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. I am joined, as always, on Friday by Rich Rebar, where we break down our five favorite bets against the spread. Back-to-back, not good weeks for me, bud. I've not been on the good sides, not reading the weather situations right. And I'm also licking my wounds after losing Arizona +3.5 last night. I feel like that was a very unjustified loss, considering how well Arizona played well on offense. And at this point, I think Cliff Kingsbury is worth like 2 points against his own team on the spread. This dude is coaching like a straight up imbecile. Like these timeouts are crushing my soul.
It was rough. I had the over last night, so I also was a loser myself. I was hoping that they tied it at the end of the game, and they ran cold at those four plays. I mean, you have to use the timeout with the clock to stop, and then just, you're calling up plays for Andy Isabella and Larry Fitzgerald instead of DeAndre Hopkins. Not the kind of outcome you wanted, but, we pressed on. Last week actually was the overall picks weren't good, but the money was good. We learned our lesson, my group, and like I said, we bet the Browns under Sunday morning, and we all woke up in the area, and it was even kind of worse. I was doing my Sunday chat at Sharp Football, and people on the chat could hear the wind, like, at my house, like, just, like, almost, like, I was, like, hoping I didn't lose power, and we learned our lesson and hammered the Browns under, and that kind of just, we just coasted through the rest of the day on that. Gave some back on a couple lines, but definitely came out ahead, so just because of learning our lesson, but I wish I would have done it twice, with the Raiders, but hey, we're on the board here, and we're in week 11, and we got dropped before we got on the show at this Taysom Hill news. Atlanta was already on my card.
Now I have my number one play of the week.
they were already on my five. So I mean, this is kind of, it makes it more fun. We could start there if you want. I do have one game that I want to bring up that's not on my card, and I doubt it's on yours, but it's like this just weird trend that I want to bring up because me and Cleve T have brought up a couple times this season about the Steelers. You don't have the Jaguars or the Steelers in your card, do you?
No, because the Pittsburgh just plays – Pittsburgh is never covering 10.5 against a bad team because they just want to lose those games. I swear they, like, want to.
Yeah, so I mean, we brought it up on our show, and we've been bringing it up kind of, over the course of the season. And even if you don't want to back the Jaguars, I mean, I can give you a reason to back the Jaguars first. So under Mike Tomlin, the Steelers laying 10 or more points on the road are 1-10 all-time against the spread. we'd seen it a couple weeks ago with Garrett Gilbert and the Cowboys that it happened. But if you want to look at not just backing the Jaguars and Jake Luton against pressure, because he's averaging in two starts, Jake Luton's averaging 2.7 yards per attempt under pressure. Not ideal to back quarterback in those odds, and you just don't want to blindly bet them. The unders in these games have just been amazing. Hits under Mike Tomlin in these road games. So in just that scenario, that 11 game sample, those games are 8-3 towards the under. But if the Steelers are giving more than 4 points on the road under Mike Tomlin in his career, unders are hitting at almost 70% of the time. If you don't want to back the Jaguars, you can look maybe towards this under 47.5 and getting in on that because these just been phenomenal. And every game this season that they've been in this spot on the road laying 1-4, they have gone under. So definitely if you don't want to bet the Jaguars, look at that. It didn't make my card because I didn't want to bring up the Jag, backing Jake Luton and stuff like that. But if you're into some trends and some weird stuff like that and just kind of going on,
I would – to me, this is kind of – it didn't make my list either, but – like if I was in like a contest where you had to pick every single game against the spread, which by the way, I would actually like to do that next year. If anyone runs, I was in a league like that last year that Derek Van Riper ran where we had to pick every single game against the spread over the course of the year. He didn't run it this year, but I would love to do that again next year. And this would definitely be a game where I would take the Jaguars the Tomlin Steelers just play down to their opponents on the road or at home, actually. Really, this is just a very common thing, and I know that's total like hashtag trends and like narrative right, stuff, yeah. But I've seen it so many times that I don't actually like I don't need to get into a bunch of granular yards per play data to know that I expect the Steelers to play this game way closer than the line is. Atlanta is my number one. So let's go to our other picks first, and then we can spend some time there at the end. My number five don't feel like crazy confident in this one, obviously, but it is the Baltimore Ravens -6.5 at home to the Titans. I know much has been made about Lamar can't throw and they're a mess and blah, blah, blah. They lost to the Patriots and whatever, whatever. The Baltimore Ravens are a much, much better team than the Tennessee Titans. And I think that the Tennessee Titans lore is kind of running out a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, I feel as if this Ryan Tannehill 11% TD rate, Derrick Henry 70-yard touchdowns runs, like, the run hot is ending for them a little bit. Their defense also is terrible, and their defense was not terrible last year, right? Their defense was able to hang with other really good AFC teams. That's not the case this year, so I'm on Baltimore here.
Yeah, I am as well. This one is my number five as well. Same reasons you said. And I mean, it's back and forth, like with the Ravens. Like they bounce back and they punch back. Disappointing because I was on them last week on Sunday night. I knew early I was dead in that one as well. But I was on them last week at the end of Sunday night, and real disappointing that their defense no-showed against the run in that game. Like Damian Harris was like, and Damian Harris, Damian Harris is in the game, guys. Like they're running the football. There's nothing else. He's Sony Michel.
He has two targets this season. Damian Harris.
He has no third down touches, and 75% of his touches are on first down. Like if Damian Harris is in the game, the Patriots are lining up and running the football, and they still like no one has stopped him. He's been hyper efficient, but it was disappointing to see them come out and knowing on your couch watching the game and knowing what the play call is going to be, and they can't stop it. And then when the second half, that rain got real bad, I was like, oh, we're drawn dead here. I do like this spot, you know, as I like this matchup, for, like you said, for the defensive reasons. The Tennessee defense is just struggling so bad. They're not getting any pressure on the quarterback, and that's kind of just been where Lamar's at. I mean, you look at last year, he only got sacked on 5.4% of his dropbacks. This year it's 8.5%. Quite a big jump. You know, you lose Ronnie Stanley. They had lost Marshall Yanda. You know, coming into this season, but Tennessee can't get any pressure on the quarterback. They are still pressuring the quarterback on the other side, where Ryan Tannehill, you know, has kind of struggled against pressure this season. He hasn't played well in tougher matchups of late. You know, they faced the Steelers, the Colts, and Bears over the past month. And Ryan Tannehill, who also, like Lamar, is, you know, going through the regression, you know, of what he did last year that just was unsustainable. And he started out hot, and then now it's starting to catch up to him. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of where I'm at. I think it's a game where they can slow Derrick Henry down enough. I don't think Derrick Henry repeats the playoff performance that he had. And I don't think the Ravens are chasing as many points. I mean, this is kind of where it all started. You know, the narrative of Lamar, you know, not being able to, like, all you do is go up 10 on go up 10 on the Ravens. You're good. This was the game, but, I do like this from the Ravens side, just from a matchup perspective. But I said that last week and I was completely wrong, but going back to the well.
Yeah, there we go. I mean, the Ravens have generally been good for us, I feel like, because, you know, the public, obviously, after that Chiefs game, and I think that this is what's happening with this line. This line, I think, had they beat the Patriots, you know, convincingly, it would be 17.5, or not 17, 7.5, right? And instead, it's 6.5. So, yeah, I mean, I feel pretty comfortable with this one. Okay, so what is your number five here?
So my number four is the Chiefs. I didn't know how far I could move them up, but I've got them at four because I like these other games a little bit more. I mean, this is just a spot for the Chiefs. We've got one. Well, we have the Andy Reid off of a bye narrative. Like, you'll hear that all week. You probably have already heard it. We've got the revenge factor. You know, the Raiders went in and beat Kansas City in week 5. But since hiring Andy Reid, I mean, Kansas City, even including that game in week 5, they have the league's best record against divisional opponents, 34-11. Over the past 5 years, it's 29-4, that including that game against the Raiders. They've had, you know, the extra time to prepare. I think the Raiders are finally getting respect. I think we talked about them a couple weeks ago. I mean, their offense is efficient. So maybe they cover here and can backdoor this, but I think that this is kind of, and if Clyde Edwards-Helaire somehow doesn't play in this game, we'll find out today. We're recording this on Friday morning and he didn't practice because of illness yesterday. Like, I feel like that just helps them swerve into what they've been doing the past two games. The Chiefs heading into the bye, the previous two games faced the Panthers and Jets and just said, we're just going to like let Patrick Mahomes win these games for us and just throw. They had their highest pass rates of the season those 2 weeks coming to the bye, and they didn't need to. they could have meandered their way through those games and won those games, but they just said, we're going to line up and just throw on first down, second down, third down with Patrick Mahomes. And I don't think that the Raiders defensively, for as opportunists as they've been on times against guys like Drew Lock, and they did force the only interception of Patrick Mahomes' season this year, that they're going to really put up much of a fight here stopping Patrick Mahomes again this week. I think that this is going to be a Chiefs like come out of the bye blitzkrieg week.
Yeah, this was my number two game. I mean, just
okay. I'm sure six. The points, like, because the super contest I think was 6.5, but right now it's like 8.
I locked it in at 6.5 as well, yeah. Because the time to bet a Chiefs game is always on Sunday night. Like, don't wait for yep. You know, your uncle in Poughkeepsie to be betting the Chiefs, because they all generally, it always migrates a point towards, well, I mean, generally speaking, like, things can go all sorts of different ways. But yeah, I do feel pretty strongly about this line, because the Chiefs are one of those teams that doesn't like hide their motivations for these things. And like Kelsey and Tyreek on conference calls this week have been like, oh, we hate the Raiders and we hate that we lost to them. And like Travis Kelsey very specifically was like, we want revenge for that loss, because, you know, we wanted to have an undefeated season and everything. And, you know, I think that
Oh, you didn't see that? Well, I guess in the first game, the Raiders on the team bus before they went to the airport had the bus driver take a victory lap around the stadium. And they interviewed Andy Reid about that this week, and he was not very happy about it, man. Like, so, I mean, yeah, I'm curious. I don't know how much that plays in, but, like, I think definitely they are, like, pissed off they aren't undefeated right now.
Yeah, and these are stupid narrative reasons to just make your brain feel better about the bet. But the best reason to make this bet is just, like, the Chiefs are capable of putting up 50 points pretty much whenever they want. Like, they are – the 2020 Chiefs are – like, if Andy Reid and the team wanted to do this, they could break all of Brady's records from that insane Patriots season. It would not be hard. They could do it.
So this time last year, we did this podcast, and it was basically like – this is like the time of the year I just, like, came on every week. We just said, screw it.
Yeah.
And we were talking – well, this is at the time they were, like, the Ravens were, like, insane. And we kept saying, grab Chiefs Super Bowl tickets, grab Chiefs Super Bowl tickets. Like, the Chiefs are the best team in the NFL. I think everyone feels the Chiefs are the best team in the NFL. Is there a pivot? Like, if you aren't going to grab a Chiefs Super Bowl ticket this year, do you have someone right now you're looking at? Like, do you think that there's anyone you take a shot on? Like, outside of the Chiefs, I mean, I clearly think they're the best team again. But
the Cardinals,
the narrative,
the Cardinals
here,
are the team for me. You,
you just bash Cliff Kingsbury. You just
like, so look, no, that's what I'm saying though. Do you know how incredible it is that they are 6-4 and they're playing this well when their coach is that bad? Like,
yeah, I mean, Kyler's so good. When he banged up his shoulder, man, I was a little worried.
Yeah, that's true.
He did not throw the ball downfield the rest of that game. But it's interesting that you say that after taking that. I mean, I was leaning towards the Saints for a while, like, coming up, and I just don't know what to make of this Breeze thing.
See, I would never bet on the Saints, because I just always think that they're going to get cucked in the playoffs at some point, basically.
It's true.
And, you know, I think that the Seahawks are close. Like, to me it would be the Seahawks or the Cardinals would be the other team that I, like, if I was going to be placing bets right now in the futures market, it would be on one of those two teams, because I think that the very traditional and established NFL markets underrate a team like Seattle that is just throwing the ball all the time now has a bad defense.
Can it flip from last year? Do you think there's any chance the Ravens have a shot to go? I mean,
sure. I mean, I would not bet them, but like, if you told me that the Ravens go into Arrowhead and they win a game 28-24, Mahomes gets sacked 6 times, and, you know, just kind of like, if Mahomes has a B+ game instead of an A+ game, the Chiefs are pretty vulnerable because they can't run the ball at all. And the Chiefs defense is kind of like remember those mid, like, aughts Colts defenses where it was all they put all their money on defense in the edge rushers and in the safeties, so they were great when they were up 10 points, right? But then if they ever got down 10 points, it was like they have, you know, they have a grocery bag checker from the local store at nose tackle and at linebacker, and they would just get ran on. That's kind of what the Chiefs are like, where they are not good at some of the fundamental defensive stuff, but they have these really good defensive backs and edge rushers, so they're good at playing with the lead.
Yeah, that's how kind of how the Packers are built too, you know. It's very similar. Like they don't like the Packers don't care about stopping the run, and but it only shows up like when it's close, like the Vikings game. Like, oh, yep. We cannot get Dalvin Cook off the field because we're not up 10 points.
Yeah. No, 100%.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, that's cool though. Yeah, the targets. We were hammering the Chiefs last year. I mean, multiple Chiefs tickets.
Yeah. All right, so that
yeah, so that was my four.
Okay, so that was my two. My next one is this. I guess this is my four. It's the Dallas Cowboys plus 7.5 points at the Minnesota Vikings.
I like this one, man. I like this one.
The Vikings giving 7.5 points. Come on, bro. Like, I feel like this is literally giving Dalvin Cook like 3 points. Like, see, I really think that that's what this line is. Is it's just like terrified. And I know actually this is a wild stat. When I saw this, I didn't even believe it. The Vikings are tied for first in the NFL in yards per play. It's incredible.
They've been for a while.
I would have never guessed it, but it's obviously related to they run a super low volume of plays on offense, and then once every 38 plays, Dalvin Cook breaks off for a 70-yard touchdown, and that's pretty useful.
Kirk Cousins is first in the NFL in yards per pass attempt and yards per completion.
It's incredible. Yeah. I mean, and Kirk is playing well. This isn't even really a hatred of the Vikings thing. It's just, I think it's a point and a half too much. I think this is a classic Minnesota by six. I mean, and also this is maybe like a little bit of a bit in Kellen Moore figuring stuff out. Like he loses Dak Prescott, Zeke's playing like shit, fumbling all over the place. Right. And it's just like, I feel like in the middle of a season, it's kind of hard. It's kind of easy to lose the plot, right? So you're switching from Dak to Dalton to DiNucci to Gilbert, and and now they've had a bye week. They had a second to watch a bunch of film. I'm sure Kellen Moore has met with some of the analytics staffers, and just to come up with like a more cohesive way to change the offense from the Dak offense to the Andy Dalton offense. That is. Again, narrative grasping here to make our brains just latch on to something that makes sense other than just saying like this is a point and a half too much. But I do feel like the Cowboys offense should be able to score enough points that against other mediocre teams like the Vikings, they should be able to be kind of competitive.
Yeah, I agree. And we talked about this on our podcast too a little bit. So the 7 quarters that Andy Dalton played, I feel like, I'm not trying to say Andy Dalton is like some world-beating quarterback. I think he's definitely like a baseline quarterback or maybe a little bit above adequacy. But like he is not – he threw for 4.3 yards per attempt and 3.9 yards per pass. Like he's not that – there's no way that's who he is in my mind. Like there's just no way he's that bad. That's like 2.5 yards under his career, like yards per attempt average with Amari Cooper, with Zeke Elliott, with CeeDee Lamb. Like, I just have a hard time believing that what we've seen from Andy Dalton on the small sample is exactly what he's going to be the rest of the season going forward. Does that mean he's like a great fantasy play? Does it mean he's a guy that's going to necessarily win them games? I don't necessarily believe that either. I just don't believe that he is that bad is what we've seen. So I think there's some regression to what we'll see from Andy Dalton in terms of performance. I think the offensive line is going to be a little bit better coming out of the bye than it was when he was, playing. And like you said, I mean, there's just too much talent offensively here for them to be like a bottom five offense. Does that mean they're going to jump to a top five offense again without Dak? No, I don't believe that. But for them to be a bottom five offense, I think that for them to
it just feels insane, right? Like it just feels insane for an offense with Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup, CeeDee Lamb, Ezekiel Elliott, Tony Pollard, and like a bad offensive line, but not like not like the Bengals offensive line, Like they're a little bit better than that. Like it just feels crazy for them to be that bad.
And we already seen them right before the bye kind of punch up against a better defense against the Steelers. They definitely had ample time. They should have won that game outright. Mike McCarthy wasn't such a coward. They might win that game with Garrett Gilbert, their third quarterback of the season against the Steelers. Granted, that was at home. But, I mean, this Minnesota defense, even though they've been better coming out of the bye, they've had some weird kind of, games. Obviously, you face Nick Foles. They face Rodgers in, like, the heavy wind, the wind game. Sandwiching that Matt Stafford game where he got knocked out in the second half of that game and Chase Daniel came in. So I'm not really fully buying the Minnesota defense. I think that they don't really have much of a pass rush to be scared of. They've got some decent safeties, but the cornerbacks are a travesty. So, I mean, I think that this is, like you said, I think it's It's too high. It's not on my card, but we did talk about it yesterday. I do think that it's a spot. If you are going to back a team here, you back Dallas at the 7.5 or the 7 if you get it.
Yeah. All right. So what is your next one?
My 3 was the Falcons. And, you know, I had this, you know, take, you know, before I was on the Falcons. Before this, the news came out before the show that Taysom Hill was going to be starting, which I don't know. We can get into the weeds here on like how much do we buy, like him starting actually means he's going to take every rep at quarterback.
So I wouldn't have believed it, but Schefter tweeted Jameis Winston will not be involved in any offensive snaps. And you know what,
man, I don't know
what, so this is what makes me think that that's true. Why would all of this, like, someone is obviously leaking this, right? Like, it's not like Schefter and Underhill and Rappaport don't have contacts inside the Saints organization that is telling them what to tweet. What it makes me think is Jameis did something, right? Like, there was a disagreement or, you know, something is going on inside that organization, because it doesn't even make any sense in terms of, like, this is like a must-win game for the Saints. Why would you even want to tell all of this stuff to the Falcons, who you are about to play? Like, there's something weird going on that makes me believe that Jameis is not going to play very much.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy to me because, I mean, if you look at Taysom Hill's career with the Saints, no matter what they've said, like, they have never, ever, ever, ever asked him to come and play traditional quarterback. Even everything they said, even when he actually throws the football, it's a designed one read play where he either throws the wide, the pass that's designed, or he tucks it and runs. Asking him to go and read defenses, because I mean, I don't know if a lot of people know this, and like Taysom Hill is a 31-year-old quarterback.
No, people do not. You make a great point. People absolutely do not know that he's that old.
He's like 25, and like he's like been like some, just like they've been nursing, like, because, you know, he went to BYU, so he did the, you know, the mission or whatever they always do there. So you come into the NFL, it's like a 27-year-old rookie, because he's a 31-year-old quarterback that has not been asked to read a defense, like, at the NFL level. I mean, we are in some really uncharted territory here. Is this just going to be like a Tebow offense? I mean,
yeah, that's what I think. I think they run. You know, I just actually was working on our projections, and I gave Taysom 90% of the passes, gave 10% to Jameis just as a little bit of a hedge, and I even went low. I gave Taysom only 15% of the team rushes. And that could be crazy. Like, I could see him getting to like 30% of the team rushes or whatever. And then I moved the Saints to a 49-51 run to pass ratio. I moved their offensive efficiency way down and everything. And like, this is for DFS or whatever, but I still have him for like 18 fantasy points, even with all that stuff. I mean, it's just too good of a spot basically. But I mean, the main reason I'm on the Falcons here is I just think Taysom sucks. I think he's going to be terrible. I think he's going to come in. I think he's going to whelp around. I think he's going to throw some interceptions. I think he'll take some terrible sacks. I mean, this was a guy who averaged 6.8 yards per attempt in what conference is BYU play? The Mountain West or some terrible athletic conference in college. And the point right there is that he's 31 and making his first career start. Like, this is absurd. He has had more impact in the NFL as a punt gunner than as a thrower of the football. Like, I just take the points here. This is like the most confident I think I've felt in a bet since the Chiefs the week after they lost to the Raiders.
I mean, it is wild. And the one thing about Atlanta too, and Atlanta's one coming off of a bye. Granted, maybe they have to ad lib some game plan here with this news, but I'm sure that they're prepared in some capacity for a Taysom Hill package to some degree. But I feel like that they have to be kind of ecstatic as well. But they've been, since they, you know, brought Raheem Morris in, I mean, they still haven't played like great defense, but they've been ahead and had leads in all these games. So, I mean, you're getting points with a team that's been basically, you know, having a lead, you know, for at what, the eighth highest rate in the NFL since Raheem Morris, you know, took over as head coach. So, I mean, I liked them before, even with Jameis, because, you know, if you have to factor Jameis in, was going to help you out too when you're getting points. But, yeah, I'm here for this. And then the other thing too is the Atlanta run defense is good. They're in terms of DVOA and then on a per-play basis, like, they have stopped the run effectively the entire season. So, I mean, if you're going to play a run-heavy game plan, I mean, the way to attack the Falcons is vertically and like and deep. And if they're going to be playing a quarterback that can't do that, I mean, that I just feel even better about it.
Yeah. I mean, I just like it's it would be hard for me to feel more confident in a wager, to be honest. I mean, getting points against Taysom Hill, like, is just that's just a recipe you want. And I mean, maybe this is all a lie and Jameis comes in and he's going to deal, but I really doubt it. So, yeah, I'm in all the way on this one. So what is that was your three.
That was my three, and it was your okay. One, right? What is your one?
Well, yeah, it was my one. Yeah.
Okay.
So I guess then it's on me for three. Okay, so I don't feel I guess I don't feel I have Tampa Bay minus 3.5 here. And it's one of those things where, like, sure, could this lose because the Rams have this really good defense and just overwhelms? But, you know, it's just, like, the Buccaneers have been so strong. And they've been kind of a Jekyll and Hyde team, basically. But I do also think that the market is sort of still overreacting a little bit to that. What was it, Monday night or Sunday night when they just got skunked by the Saints? But, yeah, I'm on the Buccaneers here. I mean, it kind of actually the same argument as the Cowboys where it's like, you have Chris Godwin, Antonio Brown, Mike Evans, Rob Gronkowski. The running game is actually working now. Like, the defense is really strong. And Jared Goff historically has done very poorly against really strong defenses. So I'm in on the Buccaneers here.
The Buccaneers were another team last week that paid off for me last week. It was a good 1 o'clock. Definitely was on the Bucs last week. I think they were my number one pick last week. And was on them. Both these quarterbacks are bad against pressure. It's kind of they're 35th and 30th in differential between yards per attempt under pressure versus kept clean. Goff's at minus 5.2 yards per attempt. That's the worst. Brady at minus 3.5. Both these teams can get pressure. Could be low scoring under. There is something to this Buccaneers primetime things. You've seen them alter. Like, Bruce Arians is having them practice at night this week, so it's kind of in their heads a little bit. You could tell, but this one's not on my card. I think if I was to take a side, I would take the Bucks between it or the under. I'm with you. I think that what you have is a classic thing with the Rams, though, is they are coming off a huge win that everyone saw against a team that everyone liked, the Seahawks, and they shut down Russ. So they're getting probably a little more juice than they typically would in this spot. I will say about the Rams defense is I was really questioning them coming into last week based on their resume. And at least that earned some credit in just stabilizing what they are defensively. I will say this, though, about the DK Metcalf thing. Like, dude, you have to still target him. Like, I understand. Like,
yeah, that's football 101, dude. Like, it's literally football 101. Like, you cannot give the other team the tactical advantage of literally just taking away half of the field and your best player simply due to the decision, not because of how well Jalen Ramsey is playing.
Correct.
But Russ – I mean, DK was open against Jalen Ramsey. Like, if you're trying to tell me that Jalen Ramsey was blanketing Metcalf to the point that passes could not be completed to him, like, you're just losing credibility because it's not true. Like, Metcalf was getting open, not every snap or anything. Like, it's not like it last night against Patrick Peterson Patrick Peterson just got buried in that game last night. But, I mean, he was getting open against Ramsey, and he was also making Ramsey work, too.
Yeah, I mean, you just have to at least take shots, though, like you said. You still have to target him to not do that. I mean, we've seen that happen before and long, you know, over the years in these, you know, when cornerbacks are involved defensively and, you know, things like that. And you just have to get the ball to your playmakers, even if it's the temps, even if, you know, like, you just have to do it. So, I mean, it was the Seahawks deserved it. They played right into the hands of, you know, what the Rams wanted them to do. And then that interior pressure was a problem. So, yeah, I mean, I was picking a side there, but I just want to go circle back on that, you know, because seeing DK Metcalf not get targeted in the fourth quarter was tilting.
So freaking annoying, man. It's like literally one of the most annoying things to me in the world. And like every time it works out too, you have the people on Twitter who are just like, oh, dude, you know, Patrick Peterson, he shut down DK Metcalf. You got to be scared of these elite corners. Nothing is an example of the innumeracy of the American populace, the not understanding wide receiver cornerback matchups and the variance that is like inherent in them.
Well, I will say that's a fantasy problem. It's a fantasy presentation problem, I think, because when PFF started doing this stuff and it became new data. And like, well, it was great to get start getting this. Like, yeah, well, how many times does a guy line up with a guy? Does he follow him? Like, having access to this data is useful. And I think that we inherently know, like, we want our guys to go against worse. There are different degrees of player talent at cornerback, just like it is any other position. We of course would love a guy to get a bunch of targets against Bleedy Ray Wilson compared to Jalen Ramsey. I think you would even agree with that. But the problem is just the presentation the fantasy community has taken this, and the fact that it hasn't grown in the 6+ years, where we still are just face valuing. The Seahawks are facing the Rams. Jalen Ramsey's going to guard DK Metcalf, therefore he's a bad play, without any further context, is kind of still like how this stuff is presented, which is crazy. So in the NFL, the Patriots play man coverage at the highest rate in the NFL. Do you know how high that is? 56%.
Yeah, something like 10, like 25, 35%.
Well, it's 56%. They're the highest, though. So first of all, the most of teams, the highest a team in the NFL is even playing full on man to man coverage is 56% of the time, half the snaps of a game.
Right.
So like the fact that this analysis isn't being presented for how much teams run man versus zone is, I think, the first misstep in the presentation of the analysis. Then you're not moving on to, well, where does a guy line up and are they playing man? Because even if a guy lines up over at a cornerback on his side of the field, if the team is playing zone, that doesn't mean he's running that route against that cornerback. And going into a matchup, we don't have a clue about that kind of stuff. Like, you don't know if, like, this.
Oh, yeah, you never know. That's, yeah, great point. You don't know. Right.
Even you say, like, well, because you can say, well, he runs 70% of his routes here. That cornerback lines up 75% of his routes here. There, yeah, he's going to be guarding him henceforth this amount of plays overlap. That's not how it works. That's not because you don't know that exact overlap on a per play basis, that those 75 and 70 are those exact plays. And then you don't know if those are man or zone plays where that guy's getting passed off to someone else. So, I mean, there's just a lot where we're in the weeds. I just feel like it's presented at face value. Like you'll see it in it, and you'll see it this week in analysis, you know, like, hey, Will Fuller is facing JC Jackson or whatever, you know, like, but you know, it's just too much, man. There's too much variance. There's too much nuance involved. And then there's too much back and forth of like, well, of ignoring it. And then people saying, well, you don't overvalue and undervalue it. There's just too much in the middle. It's too hard. And I feel like it's a fantasy presentation problem. I feel like the content providers are not doing a good enough job of applying the context to the people, the consumers. It's kind of like player rankings in a sense, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, you just don't know, like people aren't providing the proper context to it. And that's why it's, the conversation is being moved into the right direction on this type of stuff. But that's way too much time to spend on that.
I'm with you though. It is. It's the way that it is presented is very rarely.
Cause I don't want to be like one of those guys that say like, well, Reap says cornerback matchups don't fucking matter. Like ignore him. Like, of course, like
I do want people to say that about me. I want people to be like, Matic is one of those guys who says, don't even look at wide receiver cornerback matchups. Cause I think that you gain so much bad info from that, right? I think you'll get more noisy shit that causes you to make bad decisions than good information that causes you to make good decisions.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. I just don't want to, like, I'm not going to be ever the person that tells people to ignore, like, anything that's available to us, because if you can find the right stuff that applies to it, then that's great. I think like, there are some cornerbacks like that, though, too, where you can say, like, there are a couple guys that follow people around, you know, especially on the perimeter. Like, we know that, like, Darius Slay is going to guard guys that run outside routes. So he's going to follow that guy left or right. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we know that. But like I said, the same context, it's like, well, how much zone are they playing? How much man are they playing? Like, that stuff's never thrown in. And then, yeah, so, I mean, it's tough, man. You're in the weeds. But, yeah, I mean – It's a lot to talk about. There's a lot more we can get into, but yeah.
Yeah. All right. I guess I don't even know where we are now. I think it's your number two now.
Yeah, my two is a team that's lifted so much money off me this season because they've run so pure, but I'm gonna get on board and this is where they're gonna not pay me back, right? It's Miami Dolphins.
I have this as a great one actually. I think that this we should be very confident in this.
How the hell is this 3.5 points? Drew Lock might be involved. Hurt?
The market is kind of coming from your perspective of like, we can't really believe this Miami Dolphins shit, right? Like that's what's going on.
I mean, even if I don't believe it in a overall stance, like a pedestal stance, like I still believe it here.
Yes.
I'm going to get 3.5. I mean, how many teams would you not lay 3.5 to Drew Lock to? Like, I mean, how many teams would I line up
the Jets,
put your line and say, like, yeah, maybe, I mean, there might be like 4 or 5 teams, but like, I mean, I'm borderline going to take 3.5 against Drew Lock. And we might even get 100% Drew Lock. Did you see this quote on Drew Lock today?
I just know that like the most recent thing he said is like, I'm in a lot of pain, but I'm going to try and take the snaps or whatever.
Let me find this just real quick. I promise it won't be long. So Drew Lock today, 18 hours ago on his bad plays, someone asked him about his negative plays. Half the time, right as the ball leaves my hands, I'm like, oh no.
Oh yeah. 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 I texted. So I have a buddy who went, to high school with Drew Lock, and he's like a Drew Lock homer. And I sent that to him and he was like, well, at least he's being honest.
Dude, it's one of my most favorite things ever. So we're getting a team that with the Dolphins. So the one thing I actually do believe in the Dolphins. So my biggest hang up with the Dolphins is one that they're getting these like special teams touchdowns and they don't have an explosive offense. You know, they have the highest rate of touchdowns from inside the red zone, and they are 31st in the league in plays of 20 or more yards. I don't believe they're an explosive offense, and I believe that will come back around to them maybe in the playoff games if they're going to be a playoff team, that their offense is eventually going to catch up to them. They're just not explosive. Like the one thing the Titans had when we kept pushing back on them last year is they could at least generate big plays.
Yeah, I mean, they could get 70-yard touchdowns out of anywhere.
But I don't think this Dolphins team has really shown the propensity for that or the capability of it. But like I said, one thing I do believe in them, though, is like this defensive scheme and like them being able to generate pressure. And being able to generate pressure against Drew Lock, he's completed 32.5% of his passes under pressure, only ahead of Dwayne Haskins among passers that have had 100 more pass attempts this year. He's terrible throwing the ball downfield, even though he continues to just throw the ball downfield. 16 of 52 on throws over 15 yards or further downfield, 1 touchdown, 5 interceptions on those throws. Here's the kicker. He's thrown the second highest rate of passes downfield in the NFL. Like, what is it? Like, what is he doing? Oh no. So I mean, listen, I'm taking this and running with it. I would take it if it moves to 4, but I definitely 3, 3.5. I like this Dolphins side a lot, especially if Drew Lock's going to already be coming in banged up. It sounds like he's going to push through and start in this game.
That's not what you want.
And if you get Brett Rippey in, it's just even better.
You know what? I don't think so. I think Drew. I think I don't Brett Rippey.
You watch that guy play on Thursday night.
He's really bad.
Away points to the Jets. He kept Pierre Desir kept a job for a month because of that game against Brett Rippey.
I mean, yes, what you're saying is true that Brett Rippey is really bad, 100%. But Drew Lock at this point, like at this stage, might be worse. I mean, you just have a quarterback that said to the media, "When it leaves my hand, I say, oh no." Like, come on, bro.
Half the
time.
I mean, it's a gift, man. 2020 has been such a gift, man. We've got Kalen Ballage and Taysom Hill as, like, DFS chalk this week. Like, it's what a gift 2020 is turning into.
Yeah, I'm sitting here, dude. I'm sitting here, you know, working on projections, and I'm just like, this is so miserable, dude. Like, I'm having to give Keenan Allen a 31% target share, a player I've hated for, like, literally his entire career. And I got to protect Taysom Hill over Jameis, and, like, it's just all – it's – What a weird year in fantasy football. We're going to be so blessed to have come out of this, you know, making money at the end.
Was that your 2 then, the Dolphins?
Yeah, I had one other game. I think I got mine out of order here. Well, I just had one other game on my list, and it was Green Bay plus 2.5 at the Indianapolis Colts. We talked about it the last 2 weeks on the show. We trust the Colts to do fine against – normal teams, like against like the 13th best team in the NFL or whatever, we'll take the Colts and the points because we think they can do well against average teams, but against teams that are good, we don't trust them at all. And against my better instincts, I actually think that the Packers are good, or at least playing well right now in a way that I don't buy at all in the playoffs. And I think that Rodgers will, you know, throw away the game at some point, you know, but yeah, I mean, I think getting points here seems odd because I feel like the Packers are just the better team than the Colts.
Surprisingly, the Colts, and I guess maybe not because their schedule, I shouldn't say surprisingly, but they've been favored in 8 games this season, tied for the Chiefs for the most in the NFL, which is pretty crazy to kind of think about this Colts team like that. I mean, not that we believe they're bad, just the way it's played out. I do think they match up well with the Packers, especially with what the Packers want to do. I mean, so the Colts drop back and just play zone at a higher rate outside of everyone outside of the Panthers. They don't give up big plays, and they don't blitz. They can get pressure at their front four. Obviously, adding DeForest Buckner was a huge part of that this season. So they do, like, kind of match up in that regard well. So they don't have to blitz, which Rodgers is good against the blitz. They can get pressure at the front four, and they don't give up huge plays. They just make teams paper cut them to death. Which kind of matches up, you know, with where the Packers, you know, kind of have their struggles. They want to hit these big plays. And when teams do that, like the Jaguars last week, although they hit the one to Valdez Scantling, like they didn't hit, that was the only one they got. The Packers want to hit those chunk gains. So, I mean, that's where it could stay close. Phillip Rivers actually surprisingly been playing pretty well like the past like 5 weeks. Because they're another team. That's the one side of this too that if I was betting it would worry me is that I think from a pressure stance, this is one of the biggest mismatches in the NFL. Like the Packers get absolutely no pressure on the quarterback and the Colts don't give up pressure. So like Rivers is going to be chilling probably back there. They don't have the weaponry you're excited about ever. And this thing with the running backs is pretty frustrating. Trying to figure that out every week. I don't know what your projections have this week between those guys. My hands are in the air. I mean, every Sunday I just get questions about the Colts backfield. I'm just like, hands in the air, man. Like, what do you want me to say at this point? Like the head coach has come out and said, like, they're just going to give these guys all carries in the game and then just choose the guy he feels is playing better on those carries. So good Godspeed. But yeah, from a pressure stance, I think Rivers is going to be pretty comfortable, but like you said, I think getting points here is positive. I have no idea how to handle this game from DFS because you got this indoor game and the Colts total kept rising and it's just like, are there plays on the Colts side that we want to play? Because there never are, but then you're like, this 28-point total indoors, like, should we be on some of these guys? And it's hard, man. I can't figure it out.
Yeah. I mean, I like, it really, to me, is as simple as thinking that the pack, like, this is, like, kind of like a more of a pick'em game or a Colts plus one or whatever. DFS, though, this week, I mean, what are you doing with Taysom? What's your gut reaction?
I still have one more game if you want it.
Oh, yeah. Okay, what's your number one?
I have the Patriots.
Okay, guy, I can't go there with them?
I think this is just tailor-made for the Patriots. This is like a bread-and-butter game. But Houston cannot stop the run at all.
That's true. That is true.
And they can't rush the passer, which is what you want to do against Cam Newton. So, like, it's just set up. Like, I think Cam's just going to be, like, I think Cam's a really good DFS play this week, too. One, he's already been, like, still good throughout the – I feel like people have left Cam for dead, and he's still been good for fantasy, like, every week.
And he literally, I believe he's like QB8 on the year.
And missing a game and having like two duds. But like he's had a really high floor. But I mean, this game, the Houston can't rush the pass and they can't stop the run. It's like all the Patriots want to do to stay on script. So like when Cam does throw, it's going to be rhythm because they're going to be running effectively. And he's played well the past 2 weeks anyways. And if you look at Houston, they've won only 2 games this year, both came against the Jaguars, and they've only covered twice. So, I mean, I think that this should be more than 3. So if you're getting this under 3, I feel like it's a good spot. More than 3, don't really want to love laying a lot of points against Deshaun Watson, but I just feel like from a Patriots perspective, like they're going to do everything that they want to do with like no resistance on offense.
So would you play Damian Harris and DFS on FanDuel?
Yeah, in tournaments only though.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably fair.
I mean, man, the problem with Damian Harris is if you wanted to go to him from a cash perspective, I guess, you know, you probably could on FanDuel cash because you say, well, if I get 11 points, that's fine. Because I do think he rushes for 100 yards. I think it's another game to objectively say. Well, so look at this. So Damian Harris, we joked earlier in the show that 75% of his touches come on first down, right? Well, Houston is allowing a league high 5.7 rushing yards per attempt on first down runs. So it sets up for him. Like you said, no third down touches, and Cam has 12 of the 16 team carries inside the 5. Like his one touchdown run is from 22 yards. So he's got to score from a distance, or maybe they do just give him one. You know what? I will say this though, his ownership probably isn't going to be as high as it should be given the matchup because a lot of people just don't believe he's going to score. And so maybe they don't play him. But I think he's definitely playing. I think he's going to be in my pool, definitely my player pool for on FanDuel for tournaments. I do wonder about his cash game viability, but I do kind of wonder if, like, he's still okay. Like, he's 5'8", and, like, Duke Johnson is 6". Like, can he still?
Well, it's like Kalen Ballage. It's like Damian Harris versus Kalen Ballage. And, you know, never thought I'd be saying this sentence, but I think it's Kalen Ballage probably.
Yeah. Well, I think Kalen Ballage, it's funny to say, I think he actually is good chalk, which is, I can't believe I'm saying that, but it's 2020. Because Kalen Ballage checks every box. What do we look for when we want running backs in DFS? We want guys that are playing three downs first, right? Like, they can't be scripted out. He's been playing all the snaps. He's been playing all the passing downs. Then now Joshua Kelly's moved on. He's getting goal line carries. And he's on a huge home favorite, which is what we look for. So, I mean, he checks all the boxes. Like, it's, I think he's hard to, like, from an ejector stance to get away from.
Yeah. It's disgusting. Yeah. But he's like goal. He gets the green zone touches. He's going to have, you know, like, he's just got all of it. Right. And it's disgusting. And, I mean, it's shocking too, because they started the year really trusting Josh Kelly, and it's all gone now. Right. Cause he played behind Troymaine Pope 2 weeks ago. Josh Kelly did.
Yeah, I mean, 3 weeks in a row, he's been completely outplayed by Troymaine Pope and Kalen Ballage. Like, it's over.
It is. It's snaps, over for Josh Kelly.
2 weeks ago, he still played more snaps than Ballage, but was outplayed by him. And then last week, it was just a dusting. It was 46 snaps to Ballage for 17 for Kelly, 0 for Pope. So, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he's at 5'8". I mean, I think you go to it. I think you just swallow it. It's fine. I do like him probably a little more than Duke, but those guys are all in the area. But I do think that those guys are going to have more projected ownership. Do you guys do projected ownership? I have some right here too.
Yeah.
Let me just look at, and maybe we can just do a quick contrast. Because people
have. I bet we have him projected very low on Friday, because before Sunday, a lot of our projected ownership is based off of, like, tags. Like how many times he's getting tagged in, like, fantasy articles and stuff. And I bet he's not touted at all.
So, Roto Grinders has Ballage on FanDuel. This is FanDuel, because we're not entertaining Damian Harris on TK at all. Ballage is at projected 16.5%.
We have 13.
Duke, 14.6. And then Harris, 5.3.
Yeah, we have 6% for Harris, and that might even be a tidge high. I mean, people just won't – they just won't play him.
So, I mean, yeah. I mean, if you're taking all those guys in a bucket at a price point perspective, if he's going to come in at 5%, even 6% like you have him, why not go 15, 20% on him? Why not go 20% of your lineups on him?
Yeah, I mean, I think he is a very strong FanDuel play, because you're getting that – you know, that elite combination of low ownership, site-specific skill set, and, like, the main thing, you know, is the team absolutely wants to give that dude the ball. And it probably makes even
he's
more
been
sense.
Good too. Like, it's not even us really trying to argue. Like, when he touches the ball, he's been good.
Yeah, it's crazy. And, I mean, one of the things you want is leverage, and Cam Newton will be a play on FanDuel. Like, people will be playing him
bit. He's cheap on FanDuel.
Yeah, and he is, you know, just direct leverage to he's direct leverage on Cam Newton. So that's pretty nice.
And we had Russ and Kyler already play. Mahomes is on Sunday night. So, like, a lot of those big ticket quarterbacks we've been just, like, playing because they offer that high ceiling, high floor, are off the board this week. I mean, we've got Watson kind of as the one guy left out of that group, like, what people do with Lamar, but Lamar's really expensive still. And then I think it drops down to Cam as that next guy, because you can't play Winston in cash now. Well, obviously not now. But, I mean, like, he was already sketchy as, like, a cash play coming in. I thought there was going to be an interesting, like, angle with Winston of being able to play both guys on FanDuel together.
Yeah, that would have been so good.
But that's out of the window now. But, I mean, dude, on FanDuel, like, I was on Holkish on Wednesday and just saying, like, how do you not play Taysom Hill anyways at that tight end? Because Kelsey's the only dude that could bury you at tight end. He's not even on the main
anyway.
Site.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, so, I mean, he's what are you worried about? Mark Andrews and his 40 yards he's getting every week killing you? Like, even if he gets even if Mark Andrews scores 2 touchdowns, you're probably not drawing dead.
You're probably fine, yeah.
But to look at the rest of the tight end position is awful. Like, who is killing you? And it's not like Taysom Hill is 6K. He's 4 or 5. Like, he's, I mean, like,
He is going to be the highest owned player on any slate, any site this whole season.
He wouldn't have been if this news didn't drop. Like, what do you think?
No, he wouldn't have been.
If this news didn't come out, so I was joking. So before I got on with you, so I text my son because he plays in a few leagues in ESPN. And I said, pick up Taysom Hill because he's available at tight end there. I said, pick up Taysom Hill. He's starting quarterback. And he's like, the app is crashed. The app's crashed. So many people are probably, after the news came out, are trying to pick this guy up because I can't get him. But I thought he was like a lock button on Wednesday. Now it's like everyone. Now it's just
you.
Just
yeah, it's a little bit of a bummer we got this because it would have been like he would have been like 30% owned in stuff instead of like, you know, 80% owned or whatever. So that is kind of a bummer.
Yeah, the whole argument was the Pete Overton antithesis behind the play was like, even if he sucks, tight end sucks. Like, you weren't going to get, you're not going to get buried. This is, and I don't know how you've approached tight end this year anyways, but it's bit like, who's paying for these tight ends this year? Like, Kelsey's the only dude getting over. So in PPR
In FanDuel cash, I have, you know, I've played some Kittle, I've played some Ertz when he was healthy, like I've played Waller a couple times, because on FanDuel it's just a little bit more achievable, like just because of the way their salary cap works. But on DK, every week it's just been, you know, Logan Thomas, Irv Smith Jr., Ross Dwelly, like it just hasn't even mattered. I've played someone terrible every week.
Yeah, so in PPR formats, Travis Kelce has 51 more PPR points than Darren Waller, the tight end two.
Yep.
Darren Waller's – that gap from Darren Waller to the next tight end is tight end 20. That's how big of leverage Travis Kelce is providing on a per-game basis – or on the season this year in terms of overall scoring.
There
like
are –
not even like a – it's crazy.
Right now, there are only 7 tight ends, not including George Kittle. It would be 8, but Kittle's out, who are on pace to score – 10 PPR points a game or more. I mean, it is the worst the position's ever been.
Last week, the tight end one in fantasy in DFS had 13 PPR points.
It's not good, man. It's really bad. It's really bad out there.
So circling back here is the point, like, you don't have to pay for tight end anyways. So it's like, who's burying you if Taysom Hill flops was always the argument earlier in the week. But now it's like everyone's going to play him. But yeah, tight end sucks. Play Taysom Hill where you can play him at tight end. This happened in a few leagues. I know people brought up the Lynn Bowden thing last year. Like, I guess I can't play college DFS. I got to get the VPN game going. But I guess, you know, he was available at wide receiver all last year and putting up correct numbers. I was in I've played a lot of college fantasy while dating back for decades at showing my age. But Ryan Tannehill, I remember in 2010, was a wide receiver for A&M. And midseason, he became the starting quarterback. And, like, I remember our league had, like, a fight over that. And then a couple years after, C.J. Procise was a wide receiver for Notre Dame and became the starting running back.
Switched to running back. Yep.
And was able – C.J. was, like, getting a start. That's a little more, like, seeing that change and live with that. But, like, having – being able to just play, like, two quarterbacks, like, a position in fantasy is such a high floor.
It's so
big. At a wide
receiver,
like, it's such a big advantage. And that's why Taysom Hill, especially at tight end if you're going to play a starting quarterback at tight end, like, that's a floor for the position, even in a bad quarterback, is so much higher than it is for tight end. It's just so much – it's such an advantage. So I just don't know how you don't play him.
Yeah, I am I've MME'd like 4 or 5 times this year on FanDuel, but I definitely am doing it this week, and I'm definitely going to lock Taysom Hill because it just sounds – you know, it just sounds sounds fun. Okay, do you have a game stack you like this week?
My Leone special, I think, the non-chalk special, I think, is the Bengals stack for a couple reasons, because people are going to look at this, you know, the Washington overall stats and like the number next, because we're at the point of season now where people look at like that stuff. He's going to be in the red because Washington is allowing the fourth most, passing points per game. But if you go under the hood, Washington on a per dropback basis is really bad. They face the tied with the Patriots for the fewest pass attempts faced in the NFL. No quarterback drops back more than Joe Burrow. So the volume is going to be there anyways. But they are 16th in the NFL in passing points allowed per attempt and 20th in yards allowed per attempt. But they face the fewest attempts in the NFL. So it's kept suppressed their yearly numbers. Because one, they're one of the worst teams in the NFL. They're very rarely in positive game script. They've been in once, the Cowboys game. That was it. And they're always throwing. So I do think that there's going to be dropbacks here. Burrow was bad when people were kind of into him a little bit last week. He was awful last week. Horrendous. Can't even defend it. Then people are going to say, well, Washington can pressure the quarterback. Sure, they can. And that's bad for Burrow. He hasn't been great under pressure. But the dropback, the volume is going to be there. He's like 5'5 on DK. And then the same thing rolls over to wide receivers. The Redskins are a football team. Gosh, still got me 11 weeks in. Are good against wide receivers in totality. But the same thing on a per-target basis. They're awful. They're not good. They're 20th in yards allowed per target, but they face the fewest targets per game to wide receivers because, again, they face fewest attempts and they don't get the game script. They're home favorites this week. The Bengals are going to be throwing on them, man. There's going to be pass volume in their direction this week. So I do kind of like the Bengals guys as like the contrarian sack this week.
I like it. Mine is the Cowboys and the Vikings game because you're going to get leverage off of Dalvin Cook. If you play Thielen instead of Jefferson and then Lamb, Cooper, Gallup, Dalton Schultz, Andy Dalton, Kirk Cousins, it's going to be big leverage off of so many of your opponents who are going to be playing Dalvin Cook and Justin Jefferson, who are very easy to play this week due to the values of Taysom Hill.
Playing on Monday night. Well, and then playing on Monday night, too. Well, not Cook, but Jefferson's price, because I think Jefferson has that game against the Bears on Sunday. He's a little higher than what he would have been.
Yeah, yeah, I think you're definitely right.
I think it, like, because he's 6 on DK, 6-7 on FanDuel. Because if you look at Justin Jefferson outside of this Bears game, his spike weeks have been very identifiable. Atlanta, Tennessee, and Houston, like very identifiable games, like to chase a big play receiver. And Dallas is that, even with Amuzier coming back, Dallas is still that. So like, yeah, he's hit in these identifiable spots. Yeah, he would have been a little higher, but like you said, he's very easy to fit in with Taysom Hill, with Kalen Ballage, with some of these value plays. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, man. What do you guys have going on over at Sharp Football right now?
So this week, if you're listening to this, it's free week. Everything's free at Sharp Football this week. Everything. That means all the picks that Warren gives out, like his paywalled, like absolute picks, which is a huge package to purchase, is free this week. All his picks. And if you're curious of his record, he's at 71% this year on his picks given out to date. So hopefully he stays strong for you guys this week. But that's all free. Worksheet's free. The DFS values column that'll be coming out on Saturday is free. We do some, like Matt Jones does like a Sharp Football Tools DFS stacks article that comes out today. Free. Everything's free. Just go to the site. Everything's free.
Free. Yeah. All right, everyone, go over to Sharp Football. Read it for free. Follow Rich on Twitter, at Lord Reeves. Listen to all of his podcasts. And we will, of course, be back with more picks and takes next week.